Blog Talk Radio.
Up next, the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark.
Good morning, sports fan. This is JP from JP. The Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. We are coming live from the Veranda High Point Apartment Complex in beautiful South Denver. Joining us on the phone, as always, is Mr. West Coast himself, Mark Foray. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's an early morning for us, but we wanted to make sure we got a show in here when we could. And you never know. Maybe there's some East Coasters that are up early enough to make a call in.
You never know. We also want to bring in a special guest once again, our South Dakota boy, Nate to the D-O-double-G dog. Nate, how are we doing?
Hey, guys. Thanks again for having me on. Excited to talk some sports.
All right. Marcus, why don't you bring us into the show?
All right. Well, you know, we always kind of like to start with what we call like the wide world of sports, right? You know, kind of covering other things that are going on in the world that are not in the major sports necessarily. Start off with, if you haven't seen the video, it's very entertaining to watch. An IU student who's a junior by the name of Jake Newlander, he had to make a layup, a free throw, a three-pointer, and a half-court shot all within 30 seconds, and he did it, and he won $25,000. What do you think
that's
about
awesome.
That?
I think that's awesome. I mean, you know, anytime you give a student an opportunity to do something like that and he makes it all, I mean, you got to feel really good for the kid. You know, even everybody, even if people are jealous, you have to feel good for the kid. Nate, what do you think about that?
Yeah, these days, guys, $25K might only pay for 1 year of college. But that's great. How exciting for him. And you just rarely see that, you know. I remember going to basketball games as a kid, being from South Dakota. We watched the Sioux Falls Skyforce, which was a continental. At the time, it was called the CBA, which is like the minor leagues of the NBA. But we used to watch kids, you know, guys attempt that all the time. I never saw anybody do it. So congrats to the kid.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that. I mean, I wish I had been able to see more of those. And, you know, when you think about how much money schools have in their endowments, you know, it's like, maybe they should do this kind of stuff every game. You know, like the halftime of every game, give somebody a shot to win even just $10,000. Because $10,000 knocked off your student loan bill could be $50,000 by the time you're done paying it off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a big difference.
It does, but be careful.
No, it makes things exciting.
Just because there are some schools saying they're not making any money right now, and those are obviously outside of the power conferences in football that are making millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah, I guess I wonder how many schools are not making money. I mean, I can see a smaller state university where they're getting less and less funding from the state government, and maybe they're having trouble with money, but any major university – you know, they have endowments in the billions of dollars. And when they tell you, like, you know, for instance, I went to school at CU in Boulder, and I get requests for money every month, every single month of since I graduated. And, you know, when I drive by CU and I see a massive new law building being built that, you know, rumored to cost, you know, I don't know, $800 million or whatever it is, it makes me kind of hard to believe that they need my $50. You know what I mean? But who knows?
Very, very, very true. I mean, the universities are always asking for money. It's kind of like the Catholic Church. You don't want to pay $10,000, they're going to excommunicate you.
And they don't have to pay taxes either. So, you know, so I guess the moral of the story is make sure that you give money to your school, give money to your church, and you can avoid going to hell. So hopefully it works out for everybody. We do want to mention that, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Jason Bohn, I think is how you say it, B-O-H-N. It's Bohn. I'm sorry. So he suffered a mild heart attack walking off the course after shooting a 72 at the Honda Open. Sounds like he's in stable condition, but that's kind of a scary thought because I don't think he's that old. I mean, what do you think, JP?
You know, he is not that old. He's in good spirits right now. You know, it's a very serious, you know, when some, I mean, this is the first time I've heard of something like this happening coming off a golf course in PGA. You know, he's playing decently good golf. And he just he went to the head PGA medical official, which I always have on staff, and said he was suffering from some mild chest pain. So they took him in, and they discovered that he was having a mild heart attack. Now, I pose this question, and I don't want to make any jokes in line of this, but which way would you want to ultimately demise from this earth? Would you want to go coming off the golf course, or would you want to go in the sack? I mean, which way would you guys want to go?
Ooh. Well... I mean, are we talking to the sack because it was that good, or are we talking to the sack because it was that bad? You know, I mean, that kind of could put a damper on things.
I'm going with that good.
Well, you know, now to be honest, I've never shot a 72, so that might be a good way for me to go. But, you know, someone like Nate who's got skill in golf, I mean, that's probably not a big deal to shoot a 72.
Nate,
it all depends on the golf course. It all depends on the golf course for me, and of course the young lady.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's Pebble Beach and well, I don't know. There's too many women.
St. Andrews.
yeah, that'd be fun too.
If you shoot a 72 at St. Andrews, you're allowed to go out with a heart attack, I think.
But yeah, I agree.
I've never come close to shooting a 72 in my lifetime.
I think if any one of us were shooting a 72 at Pebble Beach or St. Andrews, we'd probably be quite well off. And so there'd be more than just being a good golfer involved. We'd probably be rich. So, I don't know if you guys watched the Daytona. I watched it from wire to wire. I usually watch the Daytona being the Super Bowl of the NASCAR year. Now, JP, were you able to catch any of that?
Yeah, I love Daytona. I love Talladega. I love the other one. I really love to watch is Bristol. Bristol's such a fun race.
Oh,
it's
a
all bank track, and they've got basically a stadium built around the whole damn thing.
Yeah, so, very cool. You know, I felt bad for Dale Earnhardt Jr. They were calling him the favorite going into this thing, and he ended up spinning out in like lap 15 or 16 or even earlier. And it's weird. In the Daytona race, if the car hits the, I don't know what you call the lawn area, but the way it's built, the spoilers are so low on the front of the car that they almost render the car undrivable the second you fall off the road. I think that's something they need to fix.
Well, it's something they're not going to fix anytime soon, just because it is Daytona. That's one of the parts of Daytona's mystique. If you go into that, you go into that grass, one, you're going for a ride because that car, especially if it rained that morning, your car is going to go anywhere it wants to in that grass. It just depends how fast you hit the grass. It depends if you hit it sideways. If you hit it going straight forward, you're pretty much well off. You can drive out of it. But if you hit it in a spin, man, it's going to tear up the bottom of your car.
I mean, we thought not only did it, like, tear the bumper off, but, like, we're causing the hoods to get jacked up and causing the you know, like the axles on the tires are like splitting, and it's amazing how much damage is caused by something as mild as just grass, you know, or sod. I mean, it is kind of high sod, and I know it's meant there to kind of help slow people down who are out of control, and it does work, but it's kind of a shame to see one little mistake and you're done. You know, it's like you would hope that if it didn't ruin the car, you get back on the road, you start driving again, and maybe if you do your pits just right, you can catch up to the leadership. Now, what was crazy about this Daytona was Matt Kenseth was basically, you know, he was in control. He was going to win this thing. And the final lap, he was in perfect position, but he hadn't changed his tires in a long time. And Denny Hamlin, who on the last time in had gotten a penalty, and because of that, he had to replace all four tires instead of just two. They actually think that gave him the grip needed. And when he went to the outside, Kenseth tried to block him off. He then shot back down in the middle, went between him and Truex, and it ended up becoming a Truex and Hamlin photo finish. And for anyone that did not see it, it was a true photo finish. It couldn't have been more than a foot difference between the two cars to win that checkered flag.
Mark, you hit it right on the head. I want to go back real quick to the grass issue. You're right. It is a safety. It's put there for safety reasons. It's to keep the cars from going out of control into the pit box. If they asphalt that, those cars would go flying into the pit box. Now, in the same instant, on the back straightaway, there used to be grass coming out of turn two. They asphalted that because what happens on the back side of that is you're coming full speed out of that corner, and you're going to get turned. Most of the people that go into the infield grass go in straight. The people that go into the that grass that we used to be out in the outfield, the car would have a tendency to flip over sometimes. So they asphalted the back where the straightaway is coming off turn two. And they said that the front is – the grass is more – there's cars do flip in that grass, but there's it's more of a hindrance of keeping the pits safe from out-of-control vehicles. Because if you ever – if you watch cars slide on asphalt, they slide pretty fast. You watch cars slide on grass, they slow down pretty fast.
Yeah. And it, being someone who's been in a car that rolled twice, that's definitely something you want to avoid. So I understand why they're doing it. And it's kind of amazing when you think about it how rarely you see someone get hurt who's in the pit crew. Now, I know that they have that secondary retaining wall on the outside and that, you know, the guys stay behind their secondary wall until the cars, you know, come in and they drive a slower speed. But it is amazing with all that traffic that you don't see guys get clipped like every other race, don't you think?
I would agree with you 100% on that. I mean, I've watched NASCAR. I used to bartend in a NASCAR bar, for God's sakes. I've watched NASCAR for countless years. And, you know, it's everybody likes Daytona because they are waiting for the big one that takes down 18 cars. And it always happens. It always happens. Nate, you know, what experience do you have with racing? I mean, Daytona 500, Talladega 500.
Well, guys, in my opinion, we've already talked too much about it. I really don't know a lot about racing. I do know that I just saw some highlights from it the other night, and since they've implemented electronic timing, and I think that was like 24 years ago, that this is the closest race ever. So for race fans, I'm sure that's really exciting, and you know, I'm ready to move on.
Says it all right there. Mark, why don't we keep going here?
I'm sorry. Well, so, you know, we're going to move on to baseball. We're about 6 or 7 weeks. I'm not sure how many. I think April 1st is the start of the baseball season. And we wanted to make sure that we did have a chance to review the different divisions coming up. So we're going to try and do a division each week as we get closer to the end. We'll probably finish with the AL Central, that might be the weakest competitive division. Never know. I mean, the Twins might be able to bounce back and whatnot, but outside of the Royals, that division seems like it's kind of in control. So we're actually going to start, though, with the traditional powerhouse of the last 50 years, which is the AL East. Now, as a National League fan, and I've always been a National League fan, even for different teams, I despise the DH rule. I think it is a hindrance on the game itself. Now, Nate, I know you're a huge baseball fan. You've grown up with AL teams. Do you enjoy the DH, or would you prefer to see it gone completely?
That's a great question, Mark. You know, as an AL fan growing up, I always enjoyed, you know, I enjoy offense in all sports, so I am a fan of the DH. I think it gives, you know, aging players another option, especially if they're good hitters. You know, you saw Barry Bonds, or I'm sorry, you see A-Rod, you know, being able to extend his career out. Guys like that. So I think also it's good for the, you know, not the avid fan, but, you know, the person that watches baseball from, you know, a casual standpoint. I think it makes it more exciting for them. I don't think they quite understand the strategic part of pitchers hitting and making the substitutions and that kind of thing. So I think it brings more people in to watch baseball, which I like. I totally understand the purist standpoint, but I do prefer the DH. JP, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'm 50-50. I you brought up a really good point. A lot of the average baseball fans do not understand the strategic importance of the pitcher hitting in the lineup. So it's a very valid point because, I mean, if you don't understand a lot of baseball and pitchers hitting, now there's some pitchers that really can hit, and there's some that just go up there and they try to bunt or they just strike out.
Or just get out of the way.
Yeah, exactly. The strategy with the pitcher hitting is something for the true baseball fan. So that brings up a very valid point, Nate. I'm 50-50. I'd rather see it out of the game so more people understand why the pitchers are doing it. For instance, you could take an aging player and put him in a DH and be, you know, extend his career another 2 to 3 years. So, Marcus, you know, round out the topic?
Let me throw this out there real quick. What if we were to make it so that the DH only counted for the starting pitcher? And maybe not say that when you take out the pitcher, you have to have the pitcher bat, but maybe say every time you replace a pitcher, you'd have to replace the DH. So then you wouldn't have the great hitter in there the whole time once the pitcher was removed. I know that would be kind of a weird shakeup rule, but I think that would make it more interesting in terms of there should be some kind of a punishment for not being able – for when you have to take your pitcher out. That was the whole point of the pitcher batting in the first place, is it's a weaker hitter and it gives you a chance to strategically kind of gauge your game plan around that spot in the order, just the same way as when Barry Bonds was playing. You had to kind of gear your entire philosophy around near that bat 2 innings ahead of time. You could do the same thing with the pitcher slot. So if it was a DH that had to be replaced with a less intimidating hitter, I think that might make the game more exciting or more interesting.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea, Mark, but I do think it kind of gives the advantage to the teams that have good pitching, which there's already a good advantage for those teams. You know, I mean, if you have good starting pitching and, you know, your starters are averaging seven and two-thirds innings on a start, their best hitter is going to be able to stay in the game longer. So it does give an advantage to those teams, you know. But it's an interesting idea, and, you know, I don't know what they'll ultimately do. It'll be interesting to see if Manfred makes a change over the next few years.
Yeah, I kind of get the impression that he might be kind of a gutless GM or commissioner. But we'll see. It's too early to say. You know, you mentioned having pitchers go 7 2/3 innings. Now, every team in baseball would love to have even just two pitchers who average 7 innings a start. You know, the Giants may have 3, but if the Yankees can actually get that from Tanaka and Pineda, and maybe occasionally some from Sabathia, that get 6 2/3 or 7 innings. We discussed a little bit on Wednesday about how the Yankees have an outstanding bullpen. They're going to have Andrew Miller, they're going to have Betances, and they're going to have Adrolis Chapman, assuming that he doesn't get suspended for his domestic violence arrest. So
right.
With that kind of a bullpen, and if you had that kind of pitching, I mean, what do you guys think? JP, do you think the Yankees come back this year, or do they disappoint again?
I think they can come back. I mean, I'm looking right now at the, you know, their pitching staff. I mean, Sabathia's making $24.25 million. Tanaka's making $22 million. Miller's making $9 million. I mean, they spent the money. I mean, Jesus. We got Chapman up there at $8 million. They spent the money on pitching to make it happen. I don't see any reason why they should not be back in the mix for the AL this year.
Well, if you're spending that kind of money and you don't compete, whew, you're going to, I guess you can say they have to be thankful that they have the YES Network that's lining their pockets with money, because otherwise there's no way they could do this. But go ahead.
Yeah, the YES Network is huge on the East Coast, or although the Northeast. I mean, there's so many people that advertise on and so on and so forth. They have so much money rolling in from that. Go ahead.
Well, I also have heard that down in Florida, that because they do all their training, spring training down there, and have such huge facilities and everything, and Steinbrenner lived down there in the off season.
Yep.
That they have a huge following down there too. So
they,
I think that's where a lot of their money comes from. Now they have a what looks to be a good, albeit old, lineup. They've got Brian Mechanic, catcher, who's getting older, but has been pretty solid. Didn't have a great year last year, but, you know, he's still a good player. They got Chase Headley at third, who's definitely he can fill the spot, basically. They have Gregorius, who's no Derek Jeter, but he can play defense. They brought in Starlin Castro, so an infusion of a new player to play second base, who's got serious talent. They've got the aging and starting to fall apart Teixeira at first, but he's probably got another year left in him. And then the outfield is going to have Carlos Beltran, Jacoby Ellsbury, and Brett Gardner, although Brett Gardner is still dealing with a wrist injury. Now, Nate, do you think that this overall pretty old lineup, are we going to see a lot of injuries creep up and hamper the Yankees' efforts this year?
Yeah, I think that outfield is a big concern, guys. You know, Gardner would be the least of my concerns. Ellsbury, as we all know, misses a ton of time. It seems like almost every year the guy's hurt for 30, 40, 50 games. Beltran, I don't know if how old he is. He's got to be upper 30s, 38. You know, I mean, he's missed a lot of time the last –
Beltran,
the last
you hit it right
2 years.
He's 38. You hit it right on the head.
He's 38 years old.
Yeah.
So 38.
He's practically ancient like us.
Yeah, he is. So that would be my concern as a Yankees fan. So I don't know if they've got some talent in the minor leagues that they're going to be able to bring up and develop, or if they're going to be able to use that talent to make a trade, you know, towards the middle of the season. But I think the infield's pretty solid. You know, Teixeira is a little bit of a concern, but the Yankees are going to be right in the thick of it with those three studs in the bullpen, guys. I mean, it's the whole Royals roadmap, and those three are going to be tough, you know, in the 7th, 8th, and 9th. So it'll be interesting to see what combination they use with Chapman. I mean, Chapman still throws 100, 100, 200, 3 miles an hour. I'm guessing he's going to be the man in the 9th, and then you know, will Miller take the demotion and go all the way down to the 7th, or will they have, you know, him pitch in the 8th or Betances pitch in the 8th? So a lot of interesting dynamics with the Yankees, but I do think they'll be right in it at the end. So,
you know, I hear that Chapman is definitely going to be the closer. And for Miller, I don't think there's much difference in being the 8th or the 7th inning guy. I think that at that point you just want to be one of the stewards of the team, and, you know, and help them get to a win. You know, you mentioned their farm system, which has not been all that impressive in terms of lineup players. I mean, Gregorius and Gardner are the only two that are actually from their system, but they do have a decent bullpen and some decent starters in Eovaldi and Severino that did come from there. From their bullpen or from their minor league system. So I think you're absolutely right. The Yankees should be in it in the end, but we'll see how injuries do with that team, and especially we're looking at Sabathia and Tanaka. Those two have a problem, or even Pineda, who's got somewhat of an injury history. Yankees season could unravel quickly if they don't have any starting pitching. Now, the big rival to the Yankees, of course, is the Red Sox. Now, this is David Ortiz's swan song. This is his last year in the big leagues. And he has stated on September 29th, his final game in Yankee Stadium, he is expecting a standing ovation. JP, do you see the Yankee crowd giving him that ovation?
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a tough one. Knowing the rivalry as it is, growing up so close, I mean, I was an hour and 40 minutes from Philly. I was an hour and 59 minutes from New York. Mostly everybody in my area either was a Phillies fan or a New York fan. And we were four and a half hours from Boston. You know, so I know this rivalry very well. I can see the respect out of the Yankees organization to give them a standing ovation. But once again, you do have the knuckleheads in New York that like the Mets fans, that are just idiots and will ruin it. So I think you get a majority of a standing ovation. I think there'll be some people in the bleacher seats that will heckle him and whatever, you know, like they always do. You know, I go 50-50. I'm 75-25 on that, I guess, is what I'm gonna hold to that one.
And I think you're probably right. I think that the Yankees fans respect baseball enough to know what he's done. And also, I think he may be the last surviving member of the Red Sox, not surviving, but still on the team, that was there when they won their first World Series. And the Yankees, of course, will never forget that. Number one, because Boston finally won a World Series, but also because that was the year that Boston did what was impossible in the history of baseball in being down 3-0 in a playoff series and coming back to win. So that was a pretty big deal. Now, another issue that the Red Sox have coming in is Pablo Sandoval. Signed him to a huge contract, among other players, but they signed him to a big deal, expecting him to be the cornerstone for him for them at third base. He was not at his best last year, and he has come into camp very heavy, very overweight. Now, Nate, do you think we know the weight doesn't necessarily hurt him hitting-wise, but is he going to be a viable third baseman if he's this heavy?
It's a good question. I think you should buy stock in Krispy Kreme. you know, the guy looks huge. Guy, I don't know how it's going to affect him, but I mean, last year he was pretty much the worst third baseman in the league anyway. So
yep.
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, I mean, the guy still has a couple, you know, 6 weeks to get into shape before the season starts. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the Red Sox say to him. You know, are they going to ask him to try to go on a diet or some sort of workout regimen? You know, we all know, yeah, he signed what was a $95 million deal for 5 years, I think. And he just didn't perform last year in a hitter's stadium. So he really needs to make a rebound this year for the Red Sox to make a comeback. I don't know, man. It's going to be real interesting to see how he does at the plate. But he does have some pretty good hitters behind him. So I think he's got a chance to do it. What do you think, JP?
Well, he's making $17 million, so they signed him to a huge contract. He's listed going into spring training, and I don't know if this is accurate, at 255 pounds, which is one of the heaviest baseball players that I can ever remember playing third. I mean, that's the hitter's corner. I mean, you got to be on your toes at third base. At 255, I can't imagine he's nimble like a cat.
The pictures that I have seen of spring training, he's not 255. He's about 275.
Like I said, everybody, these rosters before spring training are going to list them at what, you know, we want to see on paper. But I mean, even listing
right.
255 is pretty huge.
Yeah, no, and I mean, at the hot corner, you're right. I mean, that's a problem. That's going to hamper his movements, going to hamper his range. You know, they got Bogaerts at shortstop, who's been a pretty reasonable shortstop. He's not, I wouldn't call him stellar, but he's good. But having him have to increase his range is going to be tough. It is a good lineup. They do have, well, they're hoping that Ruzy Castillo can come back and do better this year. Mookie Betts is an up-and-coming superstar. Bogaerts is right on the cusp of being a great hitter. Danny Ramirez has all the talent in the world, even though he hasn't done much. Pedroia, of course, immensely talented hitter, even though he's missed a lot of time lately. So the lineup should be fine. Now, you get to the pitching staff for the Red Sox, and this is where I would start to worry. Yes, they have David Price. They signed him to a mega deal. He's a true number one. He's an epic player. He's a Cy Young winner. He's great. No problem. Now, after him, you've got Buchholz. Nobody knows what you're getting from Buchholz. He can be great, and he can be a train wreck. You've got Porcello, who has been good, but I don't know if he's a very reliable number two, and if Buchholz falters, that's what he's going to have to be. And then the last two pitchers they have on the staff are Rodriguez and Joe Kelly. Now, Nate, you know from fantasy baseball, the numbers that these pitchers put up, any chance that they can compete?
It's going to be a tough road, guys. You know, as you said, David Price is going to be worth every penny. The guy's just a stud. Buchholz had a pretty good year last year on a bad team, so I'm wondering if maybe he has turned a corner. So this is a big year for him. Porcello needs to get back to being the consistent pitcher he was in Detroit. And then the two young guys, Rodriguez showed a lot of promise last year, going deep into games multiple times. And I love Joe Kelly's stuff. The guy throws 96-97. He's got a nasty cutter. I kind of think that he could be their sleeper. You know, if he can kind of learn to harness that control, which has seemed to be the big issue for him, that he could be a pretty good weapon out there. And he's still pretty young. I don't know if he's 25, 26, but with some good coaching and such, he could be a number two, number three by the end of the year. That bullpen is a little worrisome to me, guys. I'm not real sure. It's aging. You know, the seventh and the eighth inning guys are pretty solid, but I'm not sure about the closer. And, you know, the other thing for me is first base for the Red Sox. Is Hanram moving over there, Mark?
That's who's playing first base, and boy, is his defense suspect.
What do you think about?
You know what?
What do you think about?
We forgot to mention, just make sure we get this in before the commercial break. They did get Craig Kimbrough from the Braves, so he's now their closer. So the closer situation is locked up. I agree with you. The guy that was their closer last time, and I can't remember his last name. It's Uhara or Uhara. He might be better as an eighth inning guy, so, you know, they might be okay. But, yeah, I just think there's so many question marks on consistency that's going to be everything.
It's Uhara. He's 40 years old, getting paid $9 million this year. It's going to be a struggle for him. Make no mistake about it. It's going to be an uphill battle. He's 40 years old.
Yeah, wow.
No wonder they use the closer.
Yeah, that's why.
Now, there's one other Japanese guy on that team, JP. I don't know if you have his name up there.
Tozawa.
I wanted to see if you could say it right. It starts with a T.
Tozawa.
Yuki Tozawa.
Yeah. There you go. Very nice.
Yeah, I got my Japanese down. I mean, I got it all there, man.
Sorry, I know if my listeners have been listening for a while, it's kind of a running joke. We've got JP can definitely nail those Japanese names. So we like to have him do that and keep us away from them.
Well, guys, let's cut to a commercial break here. We want to thank everybody coming on. We do want to thank everybody that tuned in early. Reason being that we had to go on early today is I have to jet out of here at 9:30, packed and ready. We're going to go over. I'm going to go on to the Lax Lacrosse Talk Radio on the Laxworm Radio Network to cover the Air Force against Dartmouth Big Green game in the Rocky Mountain Showcase over at Peter Barton Stadium on the campus of the reigning national champion, the U Pioneers. And we'll get a little bit more back into baseball here right after a quick commercial break. You are listening to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark on Blog Talk Radio.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to sell all your belongings and live in a commune.
These dungarees belong to all of us now, Tom.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman.
We need a new stuntman!
You just need feedthepig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at feedthepig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Okay, forest animals. Kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay,
squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Complex. I want to take a quick minute just to thank our sponsors, EKFit.net. All your supplemental needs, contact Ernie over at EKFit.net. We also like to thank Sage Media for being one of our sponsors for websites, graphic design, social media, much, much more. Sage Media will build, manage, and company brand. In fact, they designed their own sports offensive logo. Contact Kyle over at SageMediaLLC.com. That's Kyle over at SageMediaLLC.com. All right, guys, let's get back into the baseball.
And you know what, anybody who hasn't seen it, you know, the logos that we have on both Twitter and Facebook, they're gorgeous. Take a look at those, really. I mean, if you see how well done those are, how great they look, you know, you won't be disappointed with the work. I know we love what we've got. So,
yeah.
And as far as getting into the baseball here, we're going to move on to a team that has really not gotten much respect. People are talking a lot about the team falling through the cracks and having an abysmal year, which is kind of unfair considering the track record of the last couple of seasons. And we're talking, of course, about the Baltimore Orioles. Now, the number one thing, the big hoop to do, the big hoop to go, is that Dexter Fowler was, I mean, not only was he assumed to be going to the Orioles, they were reporting him as signed. And Adam Jones was tweeting about him, excitement about his new teammate, all this kind of stuff. And then opening day spring training, where does Dexter Fowler show up? Back with the Cubs. Now,
yep.
What do you guys think happened there?
Did he not? Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, you know, guys, I don't know. It must be an agent thing. You know, they announced the deal. I don't know if it was Monday or Tuesday with Fowler. And then I hear Wednesday morning that he's in Cubs camp. So I'm not sure. It almost kind of reminds me of the what was the defensive end for the Broncos a couple years back that plays for the Ravens now? I can't remember.
Doomerville.
Yeah, Doomerville. I mean, it wasn't a timing issue, but it just kind of reminds me of that situation where he was in, you know, on one team, and then on the next day he's back with the Cubs. So, advantage Chicago. I think he was great on that team last year. Showed his leadership as a young player, but amongst younger players. So, I think the Cubs are excited to have him back. And it's the Orioles' loss. So it'll be interesting to see how they rebound from that. What do you think, JP?
When we review the Cubs, it's going to be shocking when we go through that lineup because that lineup is going to be incredible in terms of how much just raw talent they have there. But, JP, what I was really going to ask you about was do you think something happened in terms of the contract at the last minute that they weren't willing to – meet certain parameters? I mean, how would every news organization and the team assume that their player was coming on board and then not show up?
I think he didn't pass his physical, actually.
Ooh.
For some reason,
interesting.
That's in the back of my head right now that rumor had it that morning really early that he did not pass the physical, and they kept it very, very quiet. And it could be an age thing. It could be something where it was something very minor in a physical that he didn't pass. But I don't know what to say. This is almost like the DeAndre Jordan and the rumors of going to the Mavericks in the postseason. You know, hack Jordan, gone to Dallas, and all of a sudden, no, I'm not. You know, it's one of those fishy things going, well, what really happened behind the scenes that we can't find out?
And is it possible that the team – try to push someone in that direction by announcing, or not formally announcing, but leaking a signing before it happens? I mean, is that part of the philosophy of getting them to sign JP?
Yeah, it could be. This one is so bizarre. It falls in bizarro land for me. You know, until we get an insider from that organization to speak, one of the higher ups, I don't think we're ever going to find out what really happened, or unless, you know, Fowler himself comes out and does an interview and says, this is what happened, so on and so forth. My guess is Fowler's going to keep his mouth shut, and he's just going to play it off as, oh, we couldn't come to terms, is what you're going to hear from everybody. Because nobody...
Well, the other thing that's kind of crazy, he took a huge pay cut doing this because he was going to get 3 years, $33 million from Baltimore with the assumed contract, $11 million a year. He signed a one-year deal for $8 million, and then it has a $9 million mutual option for 2017 with a $5 million buyout. Now, I can't imagine the Cubs buying out $5 million and wasting that much money.
Right.
Maybe hoping that if he doesn't do well, maybe he will, I don't know, not agree to the option and then just be gone. But I can't imagine he's going to do that and lose that money. So I think you might be right. Maybe it absolutely is that he failed his physical, and maybe they're just being nice and not announcing it to anyone. What do you think?
I think the physical thing is probably a good call, JP. I'll bet you it did have something to do with his health, whether it was minor or not. It had to be something that turned the Orioles off, but we may never know. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, something's going to come out. There's another rumor, and actually, there's a few rumors for Jay Bruce. We'll get into who else he's rumored to go to. But one of the teams he's rumored to get traded to is the Orioles, which would be a nice addition for them. Their lineup is not exactly intimidating. They've got Manny Machado, who is the guy who's got the most potential to break out. They could use a big year from him. Matt Wieters has never been the hitter that they hoped for. Trumbo is kind of an ageless wonder. It's kind of amazing he's still playing well. They got J.J. Hardy, who, boy, that average is really plummeting to the ground. Other than maybe Paredes, who's having a nice year in the outfield, Adam Jones is their only stud. Now, can a team compete in the AL East without having a dominant lineup? JP, can they survive?
I'm going to go with no. I think they'll give it their best shot. Well, of course, they're going to give it their best shot. That's a dumb statement by me. I think they can hang... Yeah, I think they can hang to the All-Star break, but after the All-Star break, you're going to watch this team fall off the map. That's my assessment. So, Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up, guys. They have some talent on the staff. I think Gausman has got a ton of talent. He'll be an All-Star, if not this year, next year. And I really like Manny Machado. He's a heck of a player. But just him and Jones aren't going to be able to keep him in it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. What happened with Chris Davis, Mark?
I don't know where he is. He isn't signed with anybody as far as I know. So, that was just – first of all, that was just dumb by them because he obviously fits well in that stadium. And if they give him up, they're giving up – I can't remember if he was the – was he the number one home run hitter last year? I think he was, or he was close. So,
I think Nelson Cruz might have beat him, but he was definitely up there.
Which is all the more impressive considering that Nelson Cruz was playing in Seattle, which has that terrible hitter's ballpark. Now, as far as I know, Chris Davis is on the team. I'm pretty sure he's on the team.
Mark, he's listed on their roster. Yeah, he's on the roster right now hooked on a $12 million salary. He is on the spring training roster.
Well, that makes things a little different. I don't think he's a game changer by any means, but I agree with JP's summation that'll keep him in it till the break. They've got, with Machado, Jones, and Davis, that's a pretty good offense. It'll be interesting to see what they do, because they do have some talent. I don't know if they're going to just try to develop the young guys or if they'll trade some of their aging stars away. I could see Wieters being trade bait. I could see Trumbo being trade bait. So it'll be interesting to see, but I don't think they have what it takes to get much beyond the break, guys.
Yeah, I don't think they do either. I really have that. They have that Korean ball player Hyun Soo Kim coming in, and they're hoping that he can play in the outfield for them. But boy, that outfield is thin. I mean, after you get past Jones, I mean, Remold is on and off. I mean, he's old, and you know, Paredes, he's also not consistent enough. Yeah, if you don't have enough hitting in this division, you're not going to compete. The next team in line, and this is the big one, the big question mark, and that's the Blue Jays. Now, they did bring in Drew Storen from the Nationals to close, and he's very excited to be on the team, wants to help him get over that edge. They also signed Dominic Brown to a minor league contract. You know, this guy was a huge celebrated player. Nate, I'm sure you remember when he was with the Phillies, and the hype around Dominic Brown was in the stratosphere. You think he can revive his career up there in Toronto?
Well, I'll let JP take this one since he's the Philly guy. Just real quickly, I think we only saw one great year from Dominic in the majors. I mean, he had a ton of talent, and I think he's still fairly young. You know, you guys would have to look it up, but I think he's maybe around 27, 28 possibly. So, I mean, it's possible he could rebound. But, JP, what are your thoughts on Dominic?
You know, Dom, I watched him. I watched him in Reading. That's Double A ball for the Phils. Then he came up to our squad, the Iron Pigs, which is Triple A. The first game I watched him play when they brought him up from the Single A, Lakewood Blue Claws, he hit a ball out of the park so far. I've never seen a ball go where that went in Reading. It was absolutely astonishing. And then he made a play in the outfield. He basically did a Bo Jackson off the wall. He threw a ball to home plate. It was not on home plate. It was about 10 feet left the home plate on the up the third base line in the air, no bounces. I personally have never really witnessed that, especially in a minor league game. So the talent was there. I think he got stuck. He was on the upswing right when the Phillies were winning, and the Phillies started on a downswing. So he got lumped in with some bad Phillies teams. You know, Phillies are picked to be the worst team again this year in Major League Baseball. So I think he got lumped into some of those teams, and he probably lost his game a little bit. He's a really nice guy. He's a great guy. You know, I had a chance to hear one of his press conferences once, you know, came off very genuine. Everyone that I've talked to through all the organization said he was very genuine. And, you know, it's something where you really hope he can have a resurrection of his career up there. I think he can. I think just getting out of Philadelphia and the culture that's there, which is a very losing culture. I mean, losing cultures are not where you really want to revive your career. The Blue Jays have a winning culture in their organization right now. So,
hey, JP, do we have a caller on the line?
Let me look. I'm actually switching back and forth from pages. We do. Let's get a caller on the line here. This is Sports Sense with JP and Mark. Caller, who you are and where are you from?
Hey, good morning, JP and Mark. This is Jerry from Oklahoma.
Jerry, how
are you doing, Jerry? How's it going, guys?
Definitely.
It's a great morning here in the greatest state in the union. You know how it is in Colorado.
I hear you. Having lived there once, I agree with you 100%. Well, I've been listening to you guys here talking about some issues in baseball, and if you let me weigh in a little bit on the Orioles-Cubs situation, I can tell you a little bit about what I think I know. By the way, guys, I'm going to be going down to spring training March 15th through the 26th, and one of the teams I'll be covering will be the Orioles.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, if you want, I'll call in from a game over there and tell you what I see.
That sounds great.
So anyway, I was listening to part of this. I was having some difficulty with some audio cut-ins and cutouts, but I don't know. This situation is very strange between Fowler and the Cubs and the Orioles because, you know, from my perspective, from what I see, the Baltimore Orioles have needed a leadoff hitter and a right fielder for ages now. And, you know, just last year they went through, I believe, nine of one and then 17 right fielders. Nine leadoff, 17 different right fielders just last year in 1 year alone. So what does that tell you? You know, they needed this guy bad. And the I don't know if this was discussed during the show, but the official word is this was due to he wanted an opt-out clause in his contract, and he didn't get an opt-out clause, and that's why he signed with the Cubs. But that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either. And, you know, obviously I wouldn't have any problem going to the Cubs myself as they look like a definite threat to compete for a World Series. But you know you've got a starting job in Baltimore as opposed to in Chicago, especially when you look at that outfield roster. I mean, here's the entire roster that they show for spring training going in. Darryl Alvarez, Adam Jones, Hyun-Soo Kim, Efren Navarro, Nolan Remold, Joey Ricard, and Henry, Urrutia, who's from Cuba. So maybe he's that wild card. But, you know, Jerry, you got to think that Dexter Fowler would have not only, like you said, been the leadoff hitter that they've not had in a long time, but he had a rock-solid position for 3 or 4 years there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that the Orioles' strategy offensively, which I feel is fundamentally flawed, is that they're willing to forego a leadoff hitter and some speed on the bases, which I think Dexter Fowler still has. You know, when I saw him in Colorado, you know, of course, the Colorado Rockies are just glad to have anybody. They're just glad to be in the MLB, but I had to throw that little jive in. But when, you know, when he was with the Rockies, he showed speed and he showed some decent range in the outfield. The big knock on him was he was undisciplined at the plate. You know, he struck out way too much, didn't look at balls that could have been drawn for a walk. I think he's gotten more disciplined as time has gone on, especially with the Cubs. And I agree with your assessment that it's possible he thinks the Cubs are the ones that are most likely to get to, you know, the postseason again, especially after what we saw last year. And you guys are, you know, you're both spot on. They have a bunch of studs offensively. So maybe that factored into it, you know, my chance to get to the playoffs.
But because Dexter Fowler is 29 years old, so he is starting to hit that age where, I mean, obviously that's not the end of your career by any stretch of the imagination, but now you're down on the secondary half. And it probably does creep into his mind. And, you know, he was almost a 2020 player last year. 2020 players are very valuable. So I think he can hold that starting spot in Chicago for at least a year, and that's probably why he did a 2-year contract, right? So that if he feels like he's not going to be the starter next year, he can exercise the option and get out of there.
That's entirely true, and very, very possible. And another point was made by another caller, which is actually also very valid. This is another thing the Orioles are famous for. They love to use that physical. If they have any questions about players' health, they love to use that as a way of getting out of contracts. It just recently happened with another player. I believe it might have been Gallardo, Giovanni Gallardo. They were questioning his health. And I noticed that the Orioles have a habit of doing this when they're about to sign a player, if there's any doubt. And who knows, maybe the same thing happened with Fowler, and they just, with the recent news about it with another player, they just didn't want to say it again. So maybe it's that. Who knows? But I'll tell you what. Bottom line is the Orioles lose on this one, and the Cubs win, as far as I'm concerned.
I totally agree, Jerry. They're one of the smaller markets in that division, along with Tampa Bay. And I think that it's very nerve-wracking for them to spend money if they're not positive that the player is going to be healthy. And that very well may be why they weren't willing to take the risk on him. And I understand it from their standpoint of that, but, you know, the Orioles have a small window right now. They've got a chance to compete, and if they didn't, you know, if they don't take every opportunity they have, it's going to pass them right by, because the Red Sox and the Yankees, they're going to spend their way back into the championship parameters, you know, within a year. So
absolutely.
I think it was a bad idea.
And you take the division that the Orioles in, and let's face it, facing the Blue Jays and possibly the Yankees again this year, they stand less. The Orioles are probably going to be a 500 team again at the end of the season. I'll just make that prediction right now. But who knows what could happen. And as far as Chris Davis is concerned, yes, he did sign a multi-year contract with the Baltimore Orioles, which is another mistake in my opinion, because this guy, I've seen him for a couple of years now. I saw him in spring training last year. Yeah, he's a monster, who left-handed hitter who can hit 40 home runs for you, but he whiffs way too much. He's way too undisciplined at the plate, and anybody who's got a strike zone to throw to can get him out.
Well, you have to wonder why it was that Chris Davis, who was a free agent for a good part of the winter, didn't get a lot of nibbles from other teams that are having power outages. You know, I mean, you'd think anyone could use a guy who can put up, you know, 35 to 55 home runs, and he really didn't get a sniff. And he hit 47 home runs last year, 47 home runs last year. And home runs are no longer easy to come by, but, you know, you talk about his strikeout problems, and he's had almost 200 or over 200 strikeouts for three straight years. And you know what? That's a huge problem if you're relying on you know, getting runs out of that guy if he's your big money player. So I can see why it might have made them nervous, but, you know, they were willing to spend the money on Chris Davis, but they're not willing to spend the money on Dexter Fowler. I don't get it.
That's exactly what I was thinking last night. I said, willing to spend so much on a guy who whiffs so much, who's probably going to be headed for a DH spot in his future towards the end of his career. Nothing better than a DH spot when you whiff that much. For a guy who's got some reasonable speed, can get you on, at least get you on base so that Jones and Davis have a chance to at least drive them in. If that's what they, you know, had a chance to do. But, hey, that's gone now. Go Cubs.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought I'd weigh in on that situation.
Well, thanks,
Jerry. We really appreciate you calling in, Jerry, and we definitely would love to hear some updates from down in spring training. I mean, I'll be jealous. I wish I could go. I've never been able to go to spring training yet, and one of these years coming up, I hope to. But thank you for the insight. That was great.
Yeah, no problem. I'll call you guys again. It's been a pleasure talking to both of you. JP, are you over there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, buddy, you asked me a question about where I think RG3 might go to.
Yep.
Just one quick thought. How about the Texans? And I'll let you think about that. We'll talk about that some other time.
We'll talk about that some other time. That actually is in the back of my mind, too, because Bill O'Brien is – he's got some tricks up his sleeve. We're going to see what he's going to do in the draft, but we'll talk about that another day.
Yep, since we're on a different topic. All right, you guys have a great morning. I'll keep listening in.
All right, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right,
bye-bye
that
now.
Jerry from Oklahoma calling into the Sports Offensive. We want to thank him once again for calling in. Guys, he brings up a couple of valid points there, so on and so forth. You know, the Orioles do have a history of using that. Oh, you know, didn't pass the physical clause to get out of contracts. I don't want to dwell on it too much longer, but I mean, it is true.
And, you know, it makes you think that whole rumor about the possibility of Jay Bruce going either to the Blue Jays or the Orioles, no way he goes to the Blue Jays, right? Because he's a strikeout guy. He's a little bit questionable health. He's got the talent, but he also misses some time. I don't see them spending on him. I think they're going to foolishly let this season get away from them, and this might be their last chance to really compete. The Blue Jays, we know, of course, their lineup is already stacked to the bone. I mean, what a lineup. I mean, my goodness, Tulo and Donaldson and Encarnacion and Pilar and Bautista and Saunders and Martin. I mean, just a great lineup. They are, like a lot of other teams, boy, the pitching staff is a question. I mean, they got R.A. Dickey, who the heck knows? They got Estrada, they got Stroman, they got Happ, they got Chavez. That's a lot of reclamation projects. I don't know. Nate, do you think the Blue Jays lineup can make up for that substandard pitching staff?
Absolutely, guys. They did it last year. They'll do it again. You know, a lot of it, of course, depends on the health of some of their aging stars like Bautista. But that lineup is just devastating. I mean, like you said, Tulo, Donaldson, Encarnacion, Bautista. I mean, you can go on and on. Those guys can hit with the best of them. They're definitely going to keep them in the race. I really, you know, they've got some good defense on top of that. You know, Tulo, even though he's getting older, still has great range. That Pilar can make some incredible web gems out in the outfield. I mean, he was on SportsCenter about every week last year.
He was.
You know, they've got a young guy in Dalton Pompey who I think could make a big difference in the lineup down the road. He'll probably be in a timeshare with Saunders now that Revere's out of the picture. That Colabello, no one's talking about him, but man, what a season that guy had. He was ridiculous. So yeah, I mean, a lot of it does depend on that pitching staff. You know, they're going to have to score 7-8 runs a game, but they've proven that that's what they do. So I think they'll be right there again at the end, and, you know, they'll falter in the playoffs because they won't have pitching.
Yep. Yeah. I think that seems to be the consensus around the league that unless they make another big time splash trade, but boy, I don't know if they have enough, less in the minor league system to pull that off. So could be a make or break year up there in Baltimore, especially if they end up losing Bautista and or Encarnacion over the next few years. Now, the last team
Mark, just real quick, I honestly think their best trade chip at this point might be the Bautista piece. You know, yes, he's getting older, but could he definitely help a team, you know, this year? Absolutely. So, you know, if he's having a great first half, he could be a piece that they could trade for pitching. You know, I don't know what kind of starter they could get. It would have to be somebody comparable that's older and having a good year and, you know, a similar salary. I'm not real sure who comes to mind there, but that would be the one trade piece that I could see. And again, Encarnacion, with being on, you know, the contract year, that he's a possibility. I think they're probably going to try to lock him down. But anyway, that's all I got. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, you definitely. I mean, and the thing is, I'm not even sure. We'll be looking into this later as we get closer to the opening of the season. What good starting pitchers are out there who are going to be available? Because boy, that the last couple of years we've seen a lot of great pitchers come up for free agency or trade and get signed in, and I don't know if there's that many options this year, so that could make it tough for them. Now the last team we've got in the AL East, and we'll finish off our baseball preview, is the Devil Rays. Now the Devil Rays are a small market team; they can't draw fans to fill a bandbox. They don't get much attention. They've had to trade away or let go of their superstars because they can't afford them. But I tell you what, you know, Nate and I, we were talking about this last night. This is a team that really could surprise. I mean, they're 41 odds to win the World Series, and they've got a lot of other teams cast off. They've got Drew Smyly in the lineup. They've got James Loney at first base. They've got, you know, Miller and you know, Brad Miller from Seattle. But when you look at the whole team, I really think it could be strong. Now, Nate, we were talking about the pitching. Why don't you review the pitching staff real quick, because it could surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw what Chris Archer can do. And, you know, if Alex Cobb can come back healthy, he's got a ton of potential. I mean, he could be a number one on a lot of different teams. You know, Smiley's kind of like the Rick Porcellos of the world. He could be, you know, great and sometimes not so great. Odorizzi is a strikeout guy, which as a number four, you know, that's – I mean, I've seen him strike out 10 in a game. So he
Absolutely.
Could be pretty good. You know, I think with that starting rotation, guys, they're going to compete. They got a ton of young talent in the outfield. I know Jennings is getting a little older, but he could have a resurgence. You know, Kiermaier and Souza look like they're pretty good players. And with the addition of Corey Dickerson from the Colorado Rockies, you know, he could have a great year. So, you know, it just depends on that bullpen, I think. I know they lost McGee to the Rockies, so it'll be interesting to see who steps into that role. But with that starting combination at pitcher, these guys are going to compete, and I think they are going to be a surprise.
You know, JP, this is something we got to talk about with the Rockies real quick. Now, they traded away Corey Dickerson for McGee, like Nate was saying, who is a 29-year-old reliever. They got a little something else, but not much. And then they also, in the last year, they traded away Tulowitzki for Jose Reyes, who, you know, now isn't even going to be playing for a while.
Right.
And besides that, he wasn't even really worth the money anyway. And they didn't get much in terms of minor league prospects. Why can't the Rockies trade and get anything for their players?
It comes down to you have to know the owner of the Rockies. He doesn't want to spend the money on them. That's plain and simple. I used to live by Coors Field. I used to know people that are in his inner circle, and he just plain and simply doesn't want to spend the money because he knows the fans are going to show up, no matter what the product is they put on the field.
But why is it that they can't trade for anything of value? They give up good players. They don't get anything in return.
You know, I don't think it's on his radar with baseball operations. I just don't think it's on his radar. He doesn't want to pay the return money. Like if he trades for somebody, he doesn't want to pay the money in return because he's trading them to unload money from his salary cap. You know, so he doesn't spend so much. Is really what he's doing.
I think JP hit the nail on the head. You know, Colorado is the they have great fans. They show up to the game. I think the smartest move Dick Montfort made in his tenure as the owner for the Rockies is adding that rooftop deck. You know, he knows that we're going to come out and drink beer and have fun at the game, and you know that the baseball is secondary. So I think that's the best free agent move that he's made in his eyes, obviously, but. I think there's a lot of things going on.
Well, that rooftop bar is very cool, but boy, I tell you what, when you're up there, nobody up there is paying attention to the game at all. And right there is the problem.
Let me weigh in on this real quick. You're right, Nate. That is the best move he's made. Those seats get sold opening day, and maybe if somebody retires closing day, and if the Yankees come to town. That's the Red Sox. That's the only time that ever got used. And I saw the deconstruction starting, and then I heard the plan going. It's brilliant. But you're right. There's cabanas up there that have TVs. You can't even see the field. It is is an extension of Blake Street. It's another street off of Blake Street is really what it is. You buy a ticket and you basically hang out.
Yeah, Colorado fans definitely like to drink their beer. So I think that was a great move by Mr. Montfort. But going back to the moves that the Rockies have made, guys, you know, they have a pretty inexperienced general manager in Jeff Burdich. Is it Breidich or Burdich? I think he's just got a ton of inexperience, and I don't know. It's really questionable the moves that he's made. You know, with Tulowitzki bringing in Reyes, I think maybe they thought that they could move Reyes back again and get something for him. I don't know if they had talked to other teams, and you know, they got that Hoffman kid that's got a lot of upside. But, I mean, Mark and I, again, talked about it last night. I don't understand what they're doing. I mean, Tulowitzki is a top three shortstop in the game when he's healthy. They should be getting at least a top-tier player, maybe another guy with upside, and then somebody else. I mean, the fact that they're just getting, you know, some prospects that might be good is just – terrible management in my mind. So
they're doing these trades and they're not getting blue chip prospects, and that's going to kill them. And I'm worried now because they're going to trade Cargo, which they should have done already. And you know what? You're right. There's GMs talking to their owners, saying, let's just wait a little bit so we can take these guys to the Cleaners. We can give
guys,
them some lower-level, older prospects and get a stud in return.
Guys, I got to interject real quick. We have another caller on the air. We're going to go live here. Caller, you're on with JP and Mark. Who are you and where are you from?
Guys, hi. It's Kurt Landis.
Kurt, how are you doing? Nice to have you on the show. Sorry I had you on hold for so long there. Oh, Kurt, this is Kurt Landis, general manager and president of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs. Kurt, what is new in the world of the Lehigh Valley?
Well, I work for a team called the Iron Pigs, so I have to say that I'm happy as a pig in mud right now. No, we're getting ready for baseball season. I heard you talking about baseball, obviously, and as a AAA affiliate here for the Philadelphia Phillies, we're pretty excited. That team specifically has a lot of young prospects in the minor leagues right now that are very successful, and we're probably about a year or two away getting up to the Philadelphia Phillies. But specific to our team at AAA, there's a lot of excitement being generated right now.
Definitely.
Who's your most exciting prospect that you've got there?
You know, one of the top prospects in all of baseball is J.P. Crawford. I believe he's number one or number two in all of the minor leagues. And he's a phenomenal infielder, shortstop here for the Phillies. So looking forward to seeing him here live. He, as well as I think eight of our other top 10 prospects in the system, are expected to be in our location for a AA championship and then all the way to the final game. So excited for that this year. But I think fans are excited for baseball everywhere.
Definitely. Now, Kurt, let's fill everybody in. The Iron Pigs are still after – this is what, season number 8 or 9 coming up here, because we back in 2008 we opened that ballpark up. Now, you guys continue to be one of the top grossing team in all of attendance. You know, how do you think you guys keep that intensity going in the Lehigh Valley with the fans there?
Well, you know, we're very fortunate where we're at. We've been number one or number two in the country every year since we opened up in 2008 in attendance. And I think a lot of it's just our staff. And JP, you know that as well as anybody. We have a very hardworking staff. But, you know, we continually invest in the facility. You don't rest on your laurels. You're always making changes to your facility. I think we're very creative with our promotions and marketing. And, you know, and quite honestly, you know, regardless if the Phillies are successful or not, you know, we have a great market here in eastern Pennsylvania of fans that are just hungry for sports.
That is true. It's fun and entertainment at an affordable price.
Yeah, it's for us, you know, as much as we talk about the game of baseball and the prospects, and obviously that's first and foremost, at the minor league level, there's just as much focus, if not more, put on the entertainment, the value of the experience. People are here having a great time. And in fact, probably half of our fans leave the ballpark, don't know the score of the game, but the success and the satisfaction, the experience is through the roof.
And I know
it's nice because it feels like you're getting back into the, you know, into the nuts and the bolts of baseball when you go to the minor leagues. I know I used to really enjoy going to watch the Medford A's when I was younger. And, you know, you get really close to the players. You get to see them up close and personal. You get to hear the sounds of the game because you're so close to the field. And I think you're right. It was never about the final score. It was about getting together with people, having a really good time, and just kind of celebrating the, you know, the picnic atmosphere that a minor league ballpark can bring.
Yeah, absolutely. We have fans that come. It's about hanging out with friends and relatives. And, of course, you know, the game matters. You want to see a competitive team and you want to see a win. But people are more about having a nice night at the ballpark. And at the minor league level especially, it's so much just Americana, you know, to have an intimate experience, to be able to literally reach out and almost touch the players and not have the same level of security or even scrutiny at the major league level. It's a very unique piece of America. And I'm biased, of course, but it's just a great experience. There's always promotions. There's always activities for kids. There's the playground and the family experience overall is so important for us.
Yeah, but Kurt, I know you mentioned, you know, the staff. I know you've been recognized with countless awards. I know that Lindsay Knupp just got recognized with an award. Can you tell everybody a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've been blessed because of our success with attendance that led to some off-field success with awards. Lindsay Nuff, who's our vice president of marketing, does a tremendous job. Was just recognized for all of baseball as the Rawlings Female Executive of the Year. Our staff has also won a number of awards, including the Freitas Award, which makes us one of the top teams promotionally in all of baseball. And, of course, baseball actually hands out what they call golden bobbleheads. And you win a golden bobblehead for your promotional success. And we've been fortunate to win a number of those and just really overall recognized for the quality of the experience here that we have in our ballpark in Pennsylvania.
Very nice, very nice. Mark, we
I wish we still had the minor league Rockies team down in Colorado Springs, because honestly, in Colorado, it's almost to the point where you think you're getting more for your money to see minor league baseball than for the travesty that the Rocky ownership kind of trots out there every summer.
Well, that's funny. I'm not familiar with the guys in Colorado Springs, but when you talk about money, your value for your money, you're absolutely right. I think the average minor league ticket price is about $10 or $11. And that would generally get you within feet of the playing field. So it's a great experience. And minor league baseball, no matter what your promotions, the type of facility you have, it's really always about just providing an affordable, family, fun experience. So each team takes that mantra differently, but at the end of the day, that's what minor league baseball is about.
Now, Kurt, any new on the horizon coming up at Coca-Cola Park this year that you are willing to tell us about? Maybe you already released.
You know, I can't tip my hat quite yet, or tell you what's up our sleeves, because we do have some great promotions. As you know, JP, we've done some crazy things and have received press
yes.
around the country, including we came out 2 years ago with our Smell the Change ad campaign, and we actually changed some of our logos to be bacon, and we sell.
Yep.
Bacon hats, Scratch and Sniff bacon T-shirts, and bacon jerseys across the entire United States. In fact, we've been selling in Colorado, for that matter.
Actually,
really
you're right. I still have my Iron Pigs front office jacket, and I wear that during our cold lacrosse broadcast over on Lacrosse Talk Radio. And every game, I get at least two people coming up to me saying, "Hey, I know the Iron Pigs. How do you know them?" I was like, "Well, I used to be their executive chef," and I'm like, "Oh my god!" And people, regardless, I mean, I still have that jacket. It's been the front's been sewed on a couple different times, and I'm still proud to wear that jacket and have that Iron Pig logo on there.
That's great. That logo is probably one of the top selling logos in all of minor league baseball, along with maybe Toledo Mud Hens and perhaps the Durham Bulls, which are very iconic teams with ourselves. So we're very proud of it. You know, it's fun with all these different promotions, not just the bacon logos and but the focus on the pig puns and what we do here that's entertaining. But, you know, we've had things such as we were recognized across the world, the first ones to ever have urinal games in our men's restrooms. And we've even given out a free funeral here at the ballpark, which won the promotion of the year.
Yeah, no. That's been brought up in Colorado a lot, the urinal games and the free funeral. Now, you guys are innovators in absolutely everything you do. I remember when you brought out the tuxedo jersey when we did the first wedding on the field. So,
yeah, I'm not sure if the players liked wearing tuxedo jerseys, but they look good.
They definitely look good. Kurt, we'd love to have you on again when we get a little bit closer to the season. Can we do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. It's my pleasure. And thanks so much for having me on now, guys. I appreciate it, and I hope all is well in Colorado.
All right, thanks
Kurt.
Yeah, I will get in touch with you via the phone and email, and we'll set up a time for you to come on actually to just focus on what the Phillies are going to do in the minor leagues and then your whole view of the minor league baseball system. Okay, Kurt?
Great. Best of luck, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Kurt. I appreciate it. All right, that was Kurt Landis, general manager and president of the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, a former employer of my former boss, I should say. Like you said, they do absolutely crazy things. Now, guys, they put games in the urinals. You can sit there and play games while you're taking a leak, basically. And they give away a free funeral. They've done all kinds of crazy stuff there. And I tell you what, I mean, if you ever get to go to an Iron Pigs game, you have to go to Coca-Cola Park just to see what they do. in game and on field. Just it's quite amazing. And you still can get a $6 ticket there, and a $2 hot dog and a $5 beer.
Yeah, well, guys,
you can go have a good night and not spend $100.
Yeah, Kurt made a great point, guys, I think, with, you know, focus on family. You know, nowadays, I mean, NFL games and, you know, NBA, MLB, I mean, in order to take a family of four to the baseball game after parking and food, I mean, you're looking at a couple $100 minimum. So the fact
alone is really frustrating. That parking cost these days, I mean, downtown Colorado, these places are now trying to get $15 to $20 for you to park nearby the stadium, and if you want to park at the actual stadium, it's going to cost you at least that much. You know, they've got to start figuring this stuff out, because, you know, they're getting all that money from the baseball deal or from the TV deals. They don't need to be gouging the fans like this.
The parking at Coors Field goes up and down as who their opponent is. When the Yankees come to town this year, I guarantee you the parking around the stadium will be $50 to $100.
That's true. So I think that's why you see so many minor league teams that do well, though. You know, besides the fact that it's a good place for players to develop and such, but you know, is that family entertainment value? You know, you can take the kids out to the ballpark for $40-$50 and have a good time. So I think that's great. I wish that MLB would focus more on that, and you know, I think that's a great way to create young fans and, you know, increase the excitement about the game. So,
well, if you ever have a chance to watch the movie Bull Durham, you should watch it, because that movie is very indicative of what it is like to go to a minor league ball game, and it's a great experience, it's a great feeling, it's a really good time, and it's a very nice low stress environment, because now some of these days. Sometimes going to a sporting event can be stressful, you know, but going to a minor league game, it really kind of is the back to the old style of relaxing. And, guys, I know we're getting close to running out of time, so before that happens, I think it's critical that we discuss what's going on with Steph Curry. The guy is starting to look like he might be one of the greatest players to ever play the game. He had 51 points against the Magic, helped the Warriors pull away to win that game. In that game, he hit a three-pointer, which is not a shock since he hits three-pointers all the time, but that three-pointer gave him his 128th consecutive game with a three-pointer. Now, JP, you were talking to me earlier this week about how many three-pointers he's going to get this year. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, he broke his own record about, I think it was a month ago. I don't have the stat in front of me right now, but he broke his own record, and he not just broken it, he shattered it. Is really what he did. The guy's phenomenal. I mean, I was lucky enough to – I was old enough to remember Jordan, Bird, Magic, you know, Kareem, all those guys. I mean, I was getting, you know, right up to graduating high school when all those guys were playing, Barkley, you know, Elijah Wan, playing great, great, great basketball. I've never seen anybody shoot like Steph Curry. Hands down, I mean, the only person, you know, people would say Pistol Pete way back before me. People would say Bird, but Bird wasn't even a shooter like this. I mean, Bird could shoot with anybody. Steph Curry can put the ball. I mean, I saw him, he was dribbling up the floor, and he pretty much just pulled up from half court, and he banked it in. I'm like, did Steph call that bank? I want to know.
Is that the one you're talking about when he did it at the end of the third quarter, and he just chucked it, and it went in?
Quarter. I don't even think it was the end of the third quarter. He was just dribbling up the floor, and he was wide open, and he just took the shot.
Well, the guy's range is incredible. I don't even understand how you shoot that far away the way that he does. Like, if I'm shooting from a half court, I have to heave that ball to get it to the net. He doesn't seem like he's effort.
Yeah, it's no effort. It's no effort whatsoever. He's changing the game. Guys, I want to bring up one real quick point because I didn't get to talk about Tampa Bay. I'm going to let you in on a little secret why their attendance is so bad. And I don't know why anyone talks about this. There's no reason baseball should be in Florida. And I'm going to tell you why. There are so many minor league stadiums in Florida. Now, think about this, because that's where the Citrus League is. That basically, they all go to, you know, spring training. The Phillies have a single A team down there. And they all go down there. But you can go get minor league baseball probably in Tampa, probably within 10, 15 miles of that stadium, there's a minor league stadium. I guarantee it. And the Marlins have no business being in there. They built a brand-new stadium. That's not going to draw the fans. I don't care if they win. Still not going to draw the fans. Tampa, they're going to be stuck in the tropics because no one's going to fund the money for them to build the stadium. There's so many nice minor league stadiums down there. You don't have to go watch the major leaguers. And plus, you know what? Grant, chances are someone's going to be on a rehab appearance, you know, trying to either doing their arm or, you know, they had a tendon problem in their leg. You're going to be able to see your favorite players anyway play ball. I watched Pedro Martinez to have 3,000 fans show up at Cocoa Park for a pitching session. You know, all he did is pitch for 45 minutes. So
yeah,
I just get back off topic there. I just wanted to bring that up. Because I know it doesn't get talked about.
There's too many things to do.
Bring that up. There's too many things to do. There's too many minor league baseball places you can go to get that, you know, that $6 ticket and not spend $100. You're spending $40.
Absolutely. You know, we also just to real quick hit the NFL. We know that's the big sport for everybody in the country. Real quick, the British Parliament has actually voted on, and it's only a group so far, so it's not the entire Parliament, but say that they will not allow the Redskins to come play in London unless they change their mascot. So that whole issue may be coming to a head sooner rather than later, especially if all the expansion cities start to kind of, you know poo-poo on that. The other thing is the Redskins have other things going on, right? The Kirk Cousins, they're not close to a deal. Apparently the sides are very far apart on numbers. They're going to franchise tag him. They don't know if they're going to do the franchise or the transition tag, but that's coming. And then Jerry brought up RG3. Now, from what I've read, there are two teams that have already inquired about getting him. Now, the question is, how much can the Redskins demand for him, considering the fact that they've already tipped their hand that they want to get rid of him by cleaning out his locker? I mean, JP, do they even get a six-round pick?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's save that for next show. I do have to get out of here and get over to DU. We're going to let everyone think about that for a week, or think about that till Wednesday night. You know, what do the Redskins get for RG? I mean, they just pretty much released him. They're not going to get anything. But where does RG3 really wind up? So let's pose that question as a closing thought here, guys. Just want a final thought. Thank the fans.
You know what? I appreciate both of the callers from Kurt and Jerry. Thank you so much. I know we've got a huge UFC game coming up next week, or a UFC fight coming up next weekend. Hopefully we'll be able to get on some of our special guests to talk about that. But just thanks again to everybody who listens to the show. And please remember to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. It really helps us out.
Nate, I want to thank you for calling in once again. Nate's pretty much becoming a permanent fixture here on the show. So thank you very much, Nate. Very insightful thoughts today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, guys. You know I love talking baseball. I really appreciate it, and let's get out and enjoy this beautiful day.
Yeah, it's going to be
absolutely
70. I want to thank everybody for tuning in a little bit early today. I do have to run. Like Mark said, like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. We'll be on Wednesday night. We'll post the show up so you guys can actually look at it. I wanted to thank the callers, Jerry and Kurt, for coming on. We'll get Kurt back on the line here a little bit closer to the season. Go over everything. I want to let everybody know, tune in. Go over to TuneIn Radio. Search Laxworm Radio Network to get the game that we're about to call, Dartmouth versus the Air Force Academy. It's going to be a great game over at Barton Stadium. That's Lacrosse Talk Radio. You can go to their website and hit Listen Live, or you can go Tune In Radio and search Laxworm Radio Network, and you'll get us on. I want to thank everybody. Everybody have a great day. From the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. Good day, everybody.